The Talk Station, AM 1500 KSTP.
Better get under cover, Sylvester. There's a storm blowing up, a whopper. Just speak in the vernacular of the peasantry.
Poor little kid, I hope she gets home all right.
Ladies and gentlemen, to the Mischke broadcast at AM 1500 KSTP, coming to you from the road, somewhere in God's country. Is this heaven? No, it's Iowa. And boy, it's never looked prettier. It has never looked prettier. Where are we, fellas? Somewhere outside of Des Moines? roughly a few miles outside of Des Moines. We're traveling in a van. This is the storm-chasing adventure that we have alluded to in the past, despite the fact that I don't think we were supposed to say anything about this. Was this trip a big secret, Dave? Because it's been out of the bag for a while. I got the feeling after listening to Jason Lewis spill the beans that you didn't want anybody to talk about this ahead of time.
We kind of wanted to keep it a secret, but, you know, knowing that I told you, I knew that it wasn't going to be much of a secret.
No, it wasn't a secret at all, at least to my listeners. And now, of course, you people are hearing this on what would be Monday evening, and even Channel 5 listeners at this point probably are aware of the fact that Dave's out of town. And not only Dave, a couple of professional storm chasers, the Pike brothers, and without knowing anything about you two guys, when I heard there were Pike brothers who were the storm chasing team, I just it had kind of a romantic sound. I don't know if it's the Pike name, which goes back actually in historic lore as kind of an famous explorer's name, but if there are tornado chasers and they're going to be brothers, I think the Pike brothers is about as good a name as you can come up with. And you two are real brothers. It's not just brothers as in you have a fondness for the same kind of adventure. You truly are blood brothers, is that right?
We truly are.
All right, Fran and Mike Pike. I'm not making that name up, ladies and gentlemen. What nationality is that?
It's a little mixture of everything, I think.
And you guys have been doing this how long?
I've been doing it for about 5 years. This is Fran.
And Mike?
I've been chasing storms for about 15 years. Gotten real serious the last 6 or 7.
And why does a guy chase a storm?
See the power of Mother Nature? It's just, it's adrenaline to see storms erupt and all the different things that they do. I love it. I love weather, and that's why I do this.
Explain to those folks who aren't aware of last year's storm chasing trip what happened when this same crew, give or take a couple of people, showed up somewhere down south and found themselves within a couple hundred yards of a tornado.
Well, what had happened was David alluded to this situation setting up a couple weeks in advance. It got better and better as the time went on, and then when we finally got down, we ended up going down to Kansas City, went to Illinois, literally found ourselves right in the path of an F3 tornado because it was a high-risk day. It was even better than what David thought it was going to be, so Dave put us in the right position, along with maps and the guys back at home guiding us. It worked out very well. To see an F3 tornado, a lot of people never see a tornado in their life, and Dave literally put us right smack on top of it. So.
And right in harm's way.
Well, no, we were safe, but we were in the danger zone. There was a risk there.
Now, anybody who's listened to KSTP for the last year is at least familiar with Dave's report in audio form because it's been replayed so often on the air. There sounded, to me anyway, like some real serious fear in that voice. Now, are you telling me you guys at no time said to yourself, this could be it?
There was about a 2-minute period of time where I was sweating profusely. And when Dave was saying, oh, my God, I was nervous right along with Dave. So essentially, we were in a dangerous situation. Anytime you're dealing with a tornado, it's dangerous.
And 12 months later, Fran, you're interested in putting yourself right back into that same situation. What's wrong with you?
Nothing's wrong with me. I enjoy doing it. It's fun to go out and watch a perfectly warm summer afternoon develop into a chaotic situation, if you could call it that. It's neat to see the storms go up and mature, and you know, it's kind of an elusive thing. You know, you're out there trying to see something that you've seen in the past, and it kind of gives you that urge to see it again, and it's a real fun time.
Now, obviously, what you enjoy seeing more than anything else when it comes to a storm is an actual tornado. Would you be as thrilled to be in front of a grizzly bear, a great white shark? What is it about a tornado? I mean, the danger could be compared to all sorts of different situations, but you guys don't go after those other situations. So what is it specifically about a tornado?
Well, it, I think it's the elusiveness. I mean, if you really want to see a grizzly bear, you can go out and see one where it's a little trickier. You got to kind of know what you're doing if you want to see a tornado. I guess I feel that with the way we chase and the way we approach storms, we put ourselves in situations where we're not going to get harmed. Where, you know, grizzly bear, it's, you know, I mean, you can't control it. I think you can control the situation when you're storm chasing. You can, you know, we try to get on the rear side of the storm away from the danger. Sometimes you get into situations where the roads don't lead you in the right directions, and you can get into little trouble. But you try to set up the whole scenario ahead of time so that you don't get into those situations, so you can protect yourself and go out and do it again.
And for the record, nobody who does this professionally has ever been hurt, right?
To the best of our knowledge, I haven't heard of anybody.
So there is something to be said for knowing what you're doing when you're chasing these things around. Okay. Now, Dave, who's now at the wheel and doing about 95.
Thanks, Tommy.
Dave, you had quite an experience last year. It obviously has fueled you this year, wanting to get right back involved in hunting down another possible tornado, some sort of severe weather. What has you thinking that where we're going is going to produce something interesting?
Well, it's the first time of the year, Tommy. This is normally this is Tornado Alley as the season goes on, but this is their first real crack at it. When they're going to get temperatures that are right, they're going to get heat that it's probably going to climb up into the 70s at least. Possibly we could even get close to 80 in southeastern Kansas. And their first really good shot at some moisture out of the Gulf, colliding with a very strong cool front that's right now also has a winter storm watch. As we're speaking, there's some snow that's expected across Minnesota, maybe as much as a half a foot. And that storm system's responsible for also producing severe weather in the warm air down to the south.
Now, will you explain, because I found this interesting, will you explain this concept of using the National Weather Service versus using this European model in helping you understand where you want to go to find severe weather?
Yeah, those are there are a couple models that are produced in the United States from the National Weather Service that we use every day here. But there's also a model that is less used by people in the United States that is actually produced in Europe. And it's a model that's produced once a day rather than the models that we use here in the United States are produced twice a day. And a lot of times, if you can refine your data that goes into the model or the computer system, you can actually get a better result out. And they say garbage in, you get garbage out. Well, if you can refine that data that you're putting into your computer and only require one model reading per day, you can get better data going in, so you get better results coming out.
Why is it that we have to go down to this part of the country in order to put ourselves somewhere in the vicinity of a tornado? Why is it specifically that we couldn't have just as much luck in southern Minnesota? What is it about this part of the country we're heading to that makes it so much more common to have a tornado down there?
Well, this is Tornado Alley. Minnesota is actually in the northern part of Tornado Alley. We're heading toward a spot that has, like Texas, has 123 average per year. Kansas has about 85 average per year, whereas Minnesota averages only 18 per year. So we're kind of on the northern edge of what's Tornado Alley. Plus, we're going early in the season. The real purpose of us going down here this early is to kind of get a jump on the season and get a little knowledge so that we can help the viewers and the listeners back in Minnesota once severe weather season does begin to affect us later in the summer.
Now, last year, you got some incredible footage. You got very close to a tornado. You, I get the feeling, are not necessarily as interested in getting that close to one, although you'd like to see one. Explain how you do that. In other words, last year I think you said you were quite a ways away from it initially and then found yourself within a matter of yards. And how you plan to control that?
Well, you can't really control it, Tommy, but as Mike and Fran Pike said, that you try to put yourself in the right place so that you're not going to be harmed by the tornado that you're actually trying to chase, and hopefully it won't chase you instead. But you put yourself in a position so that normally we'll miss you by quite a distance. Now, last year, we started in an area that was about 5 miles away from where it first developed. But then as the storm approached, it kind of took a right turn, which many times tornadoes do. They'll take a right turn. This one did. And instead of, being a mile away from us, it ended up 100 to 200 yards away from us when it passed crossed our path. And that's when it starts to get a little bit more dangerous than you want. And I think very fortunately last year we were in an area where the tornado was actually lifting as it was coming by us. And if we get into a larger tornado, as we could in Kansas, we could be dealing with something that could harm us if we're within 100 to 200 yards from it. So hopefully this year we'll have a better idea of where the storm is going, and with a larger tornado, we'll definitely be farther away from it.
Mike, was last year's the closest you've come to a tornado, personally?
Absolutely. Never been that close before in my life.
What was the closest up until then?
We had one 2 years ago in the cities. I believe on July 21st, 2 years ago, we had a fairly big outbreak right around the Twin Cities. We were out in Corcoran, Fran and I were, and we had a wall cloud that developed pretty much right in front of us, drifted past us. The tornado actually developed and touched down about a half mile away, half to three quarters of a mile away. In that position, we had to adjust our movement a little bit to get out of the way because the wall cloud did pass fairly close to us. However, it was not rotating violently at that point, which it eventually did and produced a tornado. The tornado that we saw in Corcoran touched down for about 30 to 45 seconds, which is average for Minnesota tornadoes. They're not on the ground very long. Normally, they last a few minutes. The one in Illinois, we tracked our video time. It was actually on the ground for over 22 minutes after it developed until it passed us. And then shortly after it passed us by, which, like Dave said, was very close, then it lifted into the clouds.
One thing I'm still not real clear on is how many people are into this? How many people in this country are doing this? For a lot of folks, until they saw the movie Twister, there wasn't any sense whatsoever that people on a regular basis were actually trying to get themselves in a position to regularly observe these things. How common is this?
I think it's fairly common among people that are in the National Weather Service, people that are, somehow connected with weather. I think like Warren Fadley, for example, he's a famous chaser. He doesn't work for the National Weather Service. He doesn't have a degree in meteorology. He's just someone that became very interested in weather because I imagine something probably affected him when he was younger that, gave him this desire to chase storms. And Warren Fadley, of course, has had a lot of his video on the Weather Channel, is, I feel, a really good storm chaser. He does know storms. He gets good video. He, too, is a safe chaser, I believe, at least the stuff that I've seen of. I think there's a lot more people that have their job is related to weather. I think more of those people are into it. I think there are some people that have had an experience like myself, 1965, the big outbreak. That's what really started my interest in weather. And I think people that chase, usually they've had something happen, such as a tornado hitting their neighborhood. They see their first funnel cloud. It's born into some people.
And Fran, is the idea just to capture it on film, is it on video? Is that the goal, or is there more to it than that?
Well, I think there's more to it than that. I mean, that's our ultimate thing, to get it on video, because then we can document it. It's a learning thing for us, too. I mean, we're continuing to learn more about storms and how they work, how they form, what kind of situations arise from different situations.
You guys like to look at the damage that they've done?
It's pretty incredible looking at some of the damage, like in Illinois last year, how it can touch, totally demolish a house on this side of the street, and the opposite side, one is untouched. It's pretty incredible what the winds can do. We saw a shovel shoved in the side of a grocery store in Decatur. It was pretty incredible, how it can do weird things. I think just watching the clouds develop and how it can go to relatively a calm day to a very intense situation is, I think that's part of what, you know, lures me to do it.
And when you find yourself going on a trip, going out and trying to find a storm like this, is it, what percentages do you give yourself as far as before you'll head out in a van, before you'll start driving somewhere, you want to know within what kind of certainty that you may at least see some sort of severe weather?
Well, generally, you know, Fran and myself, we work very closely with Dave. I call Dave on a regular basis during the spring and summer, ask him what's going on for this week. Dave usually will give me a tip-off that something's going to, you know, at least there's a possibility of something happening. I love to chase so much, sometimes I'll just go out on low-risk days just because if I get to see a thunderstorm, that's chasing. Generally, for a well-planned trip, such as a trip like this, a lot of different parameters need to come into place, and that's where Dave's expertise, you know, as a meteorologist, really comes into play with one of these trips, because he really knows severe weather, and to really know severe weather and watch the maps, I mean, accuracy is one of the key things, looking at the maps properly, and that's where Dave really helps us on our chases.
One of the things, Dave, I don't understand is if you're able, a couple weeks in advance, to know that there could be some severe weather in a particular area of the country, why is it that, by and large, people in this country are repeatedly taken by surprise, it seems, with a lot of the severe weather and tornado activity, caught off guard? A lot of times the death and injury is due to people just not being ready for it. And yet, to hear you talk about this trip and planning it in advance, we're talking about something that sounds more predictable than we've been led to believe.
Well, I think, Tommy, you bring up a very good point. A lot of people think that, you know, when storms do hit, that they're very unpredictable. But actually, in the recent years, in the last 5 to 10 years, we've had many fewer injuries and deaths as a result of severe weather because they've been better predicted. And the technology, you know, you've heard of NEXRAD and Doppler radar. All the technologies that are used now are much more advanced than it was in the past, and they can predict these things, you know, 20 to 30 minutes in advance before they actually begin doing damage. Now, still, we're going to get caught off guard exactly where a tornado is going to form. Many times, like we predicted, we decided that we were going to come down here into Kansas about 2 weeks in advance, but still we don't know exactly where those tornadoes are going to form, and so they can drop out just about anywhere, and that's why many people are caught off guard or by surprise. But many times also the National Weather Service has a watch out, and that's why, you know, we put out watches in preparation to tell people that there's the possibility of severe weather occurring. Doesn't mean that it has, doesn't mean that it will, but we do put out watches just for that reason, to just get people ready for it. And I think the National Severe Storms Prediction Center has done such a great job in recent years at predicting those large areas that severe weather may occur, but yet finding the exact spot is the real difficult thing.
What were the circumstances last year with the person who was killed in that tornado you guys observed?
Well, I think, you know, when you look at the damage and the destruction through Decatur, it's amazing that not more people were hurt and more people were killed. I think what usually happens in those cases, it's either a home that they stayed in that they shouldn't have, like a mobile home. They shouldn't stay in a home like that. Or they're staying by glass. They should always get away from windows. It's the cases where the people just did not hear the warning, or they didn't heed the warning. You know, they knew that it was coming, but they thought, well, it's going to miss us. Those are the people that usually are the ones that get caught, and those are the ones that get injured.
I've introduced you to three of the other people on this trip. Dave Wertheimer is also with us. Dave, what's your role going to be if we find ourselves in the middle of a tornado?
As the photojournalist producer of this trip, just try and make sure I get steady sequence pictures and tell the story as best I can through everybody in this van's words.
Now, last year, were you also playing that role?
No, last year I wasn't. I just started at the station about 6 months ago, but I have experienced several tornadoes, and I've been with the hurricane hunters flying out of Florida.
Hurricane hunters? Similar, they're just looking for hurricanes instead of tornadoes?
These are Air Force Reserve professionals that fly with C-130s and very sophisticated weather equipment, and they fly for 14 hours and crisscross the eye of hurricanes. I've done that twice with two very major storms.
Now, what's that like? I'm trying to figure out, you know, a tornado, you can isolate it. There it is. It takes up an amount of space. You can identify it. You can watch it move. A hurricane seems to be a bit more of a nebulous thing as far as getting a handle on where it is and where it isn't. How do you observe that and enjoy it in quite the same way?
Well, it's pretty interesting when you're flying across one of these things with a C-130 aircraft. Sometimes the eye is 50 miles wide. It's all open sea in the middle. What they do by crisscrossing it, by dropping biodegradable instruments to predict the exact barometric pressure and wind speed as the instrument drops in the plane, they predict exactly where the storm is, whether it's strengthening or anything else, things that they can't see on satellite, and they have to really fly a plane into this hurricane.
We talked a little bit about the danger of being near a tornado and observing it. What were the dangers in that? Flying, I don't have any sense of whether or not you're putting yourself in harm's way in quite the same way.
It's probably just as dangerous, if not worse, because you're flying into something that it's just on a larger scale than a tornado. It's just miles and miles and miles wide and going on a steady or a zigzag course, something that Dave Dahl can explain better than I ever could, but it's just an immense.
Does it will it toss a plane around?
It will toss a plane around. In fact, there were some times when we were going through the feeder bands of the hurricane where the plane would suddenly drop 50 feet without warning, and we would have to be strapped in, and if we weren't holding on to our cameras, they would have just been broken, and if we weren't strapped in, we would have been broken.
What about the hurricane, Dave, as far as, have you had as much chance in your life to observe something like that?
I have actually never been through an actual hurricane. I've been through a tropical storm before down in North Florida, but I've never lived through a hurricane. The nice thing about a hurricane is that they are days in advance. You can see them days in advance because of our satellite technology that we have, and we can kind of track them, but they're still very unpredictable to the exact course. The good thing about a hurricane is that they move very slowly, usually 10 miles an hour or so, and you have plenty of time to get out of their way, whereas a tornado is moving much more quickly, and it's a much more potent storm for a very brief period of time.
Now, when this is airing, which will be tomorrow evening, right now, if you're listening to this, it's Monday evening, you're predicting that people listening to this will have a fresh blanket of snow around them. Is that correct?
Yeah, the way it looks right now is that the northern edge of this storm system that we're tracking, the severe weather through Kansas, the northern edge is up in northern Iowa, southern Minnesota, is going to produce quite a bit of snow. So there is a winter storm watch out that may become a warning. So by the time they're listening to this, it may be an actual warning with at least a half a foot of snow.
And daytime temperatures where we're going will be roughly what?
Probably in mid-70s, maybe even close to 80.
Okay. And right now, again, we are just outside of Des Moines, Ames, Iowa. And ladies and gentlemen, they have sold this stage short. It is every bit the Riviera of the Midwest that the brochures here say it is. And I want to encourage a lot of you people to stop down here. As a matter of fact, it is, you know, if for those of you driving down to Florida this spring, if you're heading down to Corpus Christi, if you don't want to waste that much gas, want to get a very similar experience, I'd say that rest stop we just hit is as close to heaven as anything we'll see on this trip. That was the, what the heck was that rest stop we were just
Dudley's,
at?
Dudley's.
I recommend Dudley's somewhere across the border. Iowa, beautiful rest stop, we'll be back shortly.
Mishki, AM 1500 KSTP. Dave Dahl's KSTP weather for tonight. Snow ending later on this evening. Low of 28 degrees tomorrow morning. Some light snow possible. A high of 34 during the day. A low of 23 tomorrow night. Currently it's 32. And we return now to the Mishki broadcast.
Just checking in here. Somewhere in the middle of nowhere, God's country. Dave Dahl has just finished a large steak. And I don't know exactly what the story is, but apparently Dave, when he gets on these road trips away from home, likes to eat a lot of steak. The story on the ride down has been, where's Dave going to have his next steak? How big of a steak will Dave have? Will Dave have a steak for breakfast? How many different kinds of steak will Dave have? That's one revelation. I never thought of Dave as a big steak eater. Second revelation, Dave Dahl's a grandfather. 43 years old and he's a grandfather. His 24-year-old daughter has a 1-year-old. And David Dahl is a grandfather, ladies and gentlemen. That shook me up. You look at him there and you watch him on the television screen and you think this guy could, you know, still get carded at a saloon. Man's a grandfather. Is the steak story, Mike, is the steak story, is that from last year? Was he a big steak eater last year? What's the story with the steak?
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, it's steak.
And only when he's on road trips?
Only when he's on road trips.
So it's just a man's thing. It's a manly thing.
He craves red meat,
but just on road trips.
Just on road trips.
So there's something visceral about a bunch of guys on a road trip that makes Dave want to have a lot of meat.
Yep.
Okay. Any more so than the rest of you guys? Dave's known for eating steak more than the rest of you. Dave, you don't have.
I don't have that big of a meat fetish thing.
Yeah. And I didn't. I wasn't necessarily going to have a great deal of meat. But Dave's going to eat a lot of it. He keeps talking about steaks. Actually, that's all he'll talk about. We'll keep following Dave's diet as the show progresses. Continue on through the state of Iowa, a state that makes one contemplate one's own death. I find myself thinking about the fact that if we do encounter something tonight or tomorrow that turns out to be the last thing we ever see, and I think if there does have to be a last image before death, a tornado's as good as any. If this is the last time that you hear me or any of these gentlemen, I figured we should at least ponder the afterlife and perhaps even discuss what arrangements we've made at home in case of death. So I'll start with you, Fran. Is it going to be a messy business if you die, or have you made arrangements where all your ducks are in a row?
Well, I don't know if all my ducks are in the row.
Do you have a will?
No, I don't.
Okay, that's foolhardy right there. So it is going to be messy right off.
We have been contemplating it, but...
All right. I mean, as storm chasers, since most people, when a storm comes, they run away from it, as people who run toward it, you guys should think of it before most people. I mean, say we were bullet chasers, for instance, trying to get ourselves in front of a bullet. I'm sure we would all have wills, okay? It shouldn't be that different with tornadoes. Mike, any arrangements at all?
No. See, you guys aren't married, are you? Neither of you are married, are you?
I am.
You are married. Well, okay.
That's why.
Are there children?
Yes.
Oh, there are children involved.
Yes.
Okay, so we got kids here, and you guys, well, is it a jinx kind of a thing? Do you feel if you do that, if you make arrangements, if you leave a will, if you in fact, you know, make sure that you've taken care of all the loose ends, that in fact will be when you die? These guys don't like to talk about this. It's kind of like guys going to combat who don't want to discuss the possibility of death. Me, on the other hand, I'm a realist. Dave, who's at the wheel right now, have you made any arrangements at all?
Well, knowing that I have the fate of the entire van in the grasp of my hands and cruise control, I just have to ponder and just think about it right now, because I'm kind of a carpe diem kind of guy. Live for the moment.
Uh-huh. And the interesting thing, you could take us out right now with the turn of a wheel. You could get a hankering all of a sudden to just drive across that median and boom, we're gone.
Yes, I could, but you know what? I'm not about to play with the lives of others.
In fact, I'd be curious to know if it's more dangerous to drive with Dave at the wheel than to put yourself in front of a tornado. I wonder if we're forgetting about the danger we're in right now, thinking ahead to that big tornado. Now, Dave Dahl, last year you said it would have been a shame had your storm chasing resulted in the death of the people you were with, and at one point you actually found yourself contemplating that people could die when you were staring at that tornado, and you considered just getting in the van and getting the heck out of there, saying to yourself, what the heck are we doing? You said that to yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I actually thought that I had put people in harm's way, and that really bothered me. I felt responsible for actually taking a group of people down there and possibly getting somebody hurt. So,
and you felt so bad about it, you're bringing another crew this year.
Well, I don't feel bad about you, though, Tommy.
So Dave just said, I'm going to do it again, but I'm going to get different people, more expendable people. Okay, well, we're starting to get an idea what this trip's all about. Very good, then.
Mishki, AM 1500 KSTP. And Dave Dahl's KSTP weather for tonight, snow ending later on. Low of 28 degrees tomorrow morning, some light snow, high of 34 during the day, and a low of 23 tomorrow night. Currently it's 32, and we return now to the Mishki broadcast.
We're monitoring the snoring of meteorologist Dave Dahl, who has decided to catch a few winks on this trip as we head into Missouri. For those of you who have not had the fortune of hearing Dave snore, and most people who listen to him or view him on television don't get to hear him snore, because if he did this too often during his forecasting, he'd be fired. If you haven't had that opportunity, please listen in with us, won't you? Kansas City, Missouri. The Royals game tonight has been canceled due to tornadoes. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, there's been some activity. I don't understand any of it. It's all Greek to me. I'm going to try to get a handle on just what exactly has been going on. First of all, I understand, gentlemen, we're going to the National Weather Service offices here. Dave, why the heck are we doing that?
We just want a good idea. They're very good National Weather Service down here, and they have a very excellent severe weather forecaster. So they're going to give us probably their latest feeling on where the severe weather is going to occur Monday evening, you know, across Kansas and into Missouri. So they'll give us an idea of where we should set up tomorrow.
All right, you've also been in contact with the old home office up there on University Avenue. What are they telling you right now?
They're telling us about the same story. There's a good low-pressure system that's going to form. It's a fairly strong one, lots of moisture coming up from the Gulf of Mexico, and a strong enough cold front, once again, to produce snow in Minnesota, but severe weather down in Kansas, and it's going to track right across Kansas City and then head up toward Madison. But the cold front will probably trail, you know, south and west of that, right through eastern Kansas, western Missouri, and that's where the severe weather could break out.
And we're camping here tonight, Kansas City?
We're going to camp out in Kansas City.
All right. Now, meanwhile, the storm chasers, the Pike brothers, getting downright giddy back here, almost on an early adrenaline rush. I just want to find out how you feeling there, Mike.
I'm twitching, getting very excited.
Now, explain to the folks, you do get kind of a little giddy around times like this, and I can't imagine what you were like during the tornado if you're this way when we're just driving through the most mundane countryside, you know, this side of Des Moines. But what is with the twitching?
Well, it just has to do with, you know, the excitement of the whole chase, the element of knowing that something big could happen but not knowing for sure. What it's going to be. Is it going to be an F2? Is it going to be an F4 tornado? Is it going to be an F5 tornado? Are we going to see baseball-sized hail? I mean, all those different elements of chasing, you don't know until it happens.
Isn't baseball-sized hail a crock?
No, it's not.
You've seen it?
Never that big. I've seen maybe tennis ball size, which is a little bit smaller than baseball size. But down here, the hail can actually be up to as large as grapefruit-sized hail, which is very large hail.
Or the medicine, famed medicine ball hail. Fran, just curious, your brother seems to get a little more excited or is a little more excitable than you. You seem to be the calm one. Are you the more rational of the two, the guy who tries to keep the storm chasing grounded?
Yeah, a little bit. A little more relaxed. I still get excited, but I usually wait until the day of.
Of course, I'm noticing he's the one who hammers the Mountain Dews, too, so we're not entirely sure whether or not that might be the difference. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, also, what's this? Let me check with Dave Wertheimer. What's the story? What are you talking to a chopper pilot for? What's going on there?
Oh, no, I was talking to our satellite truck driver who is coming up from the Sweet 16 in San Antonio. He is bedding down in Oklahoma City tonight and will hopefully be meeting us tomorrow, wherever we may end up, and we'll go live tomorrow night.
Oh, so in other words, if we hook up with this guy, Dave Dahl can be live tomorrow night. Without it, Dave, you're taped. Is that the idea?
We're going to be on tape otherwise, right? Otherwise, we could be live, of course, via phone, but it's a lot better to be live pictures. So that could happen if the satellite truck meets us and something does come from this thing, we could be on live.
It's interesting. I'm just realizing that I'm shooting myself in the foot here with this entire thing because I'm on the radio when you're on television, Dave. So in essence, I'm more or less telling my listeners to turn me off and flip on Channel 5 and watch the tornado on the screen if there's going to be one. I disregard everything you've heard thus far, ladies and gentlemen.
No.
Well, we're here in Kansas City at the National Weather Service, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration building, U.S. Department of Commerce. Very official-looking building, and inside, Dave Dahl is meeting with some of the honchos here who apparently can help him determine just where exactly potential tornadoes will be doing their business tomorrow. Now, doing their business, probably the wrong term, not an official term, makes it sound like the owner of the house is letting the tornado out to go poopy or something. I've just locked myself out, as a matter of fact, of the building. Yes, I have. I've locked myself out of the building. The fellas are in there right now. I can see them. They look like they're having a swell time. Say, I've locked myself out here, Dave. They're around a bunch of windows. Thanks. Locked myself out there. Just wandering around in here now. Fascinating place. Various screens, computers, radars,
technical gizmos, mumbo jumbo go.
In Des Moines, 48. Repeating the weather at 4 o'clock, KCI cloudy in 58. Downtown Kansas City, partly cloudy in 61.
This is NOAA Weather Radio Station, KID 77 in Kansas City, broadcasting continuous and updated weather from Pleasant Hill. A storm system over Southern California will move into the Southern Rockies by tonight. A low pressure center at the surface will develop in eastern Colorado in advance of the upper level storm. This will help to draw Gulf moisture northward tonight, which will contribute to the chance for thunderstorms after midnight. Winds at all levels of the atmosphere will strengthen ahead of this storm, but the lack of significant instability will keep any thunderstorms that do develop below severe levels.
Just leaving the National Weather Service offices here in Kansas City now, and the fellas had all sorts of confabs. I don't know what the heck was said. Barely understood it as English. Let me see if I can find out from one of our Pike Brothers storm chasers.
He thinks they're not going to develop. He thinks they're going to get pulled away with the first batch that's going to blow up tonight. He thinks we'll have pretty partly cloudy skies, so...
Partly cloudy? That doesn't sound like tornado weather. What's that you say, Mike?
Partly cloudy skies is good because then we get the ground heating. And we need the ground heating to get the atmosphere cooking, and then the pressure cooker, the top's going to blow off, and supercells. That's what we're after.
Explain to me just what exactly was going on there, fellas. I saw you meeting around a bunch of computers, radar screens, various color this, color that, Doppler, up the yin-yang. What the hell was going on in there?
Well, we were looking at different information, cape values. We were looking at, which is, let me see, I can give the abbreviation for that. It's potential energy within the atmosphere, mm-hmm. Convective energy. The higher the cape values, the better the chances you have to have severe thunderstorms with tornadoes. We were looking at moisture that's going to come up from the Gulf that's going to feed these potential storms, temperatures. We were looking at the Vortmax, which is the actual spin in the atmosphere, the low pressure area that's going to track and cause the severe weather.
Bottom line, are you more optimistic or less optimistic about tomorrow after this visit?
Just as optimistic as we've been, if not a little bit more, because I think we're going to be partly cloudy and we're going to heat up.
Okay, so partly cloudy, good.
It's very good.
Good, partly cloudy, good. I've always liked partly cloudy weather myself, but I didn't know you wanted it when you were looking for tornadoes.
Absolutely, you got to heat it up.
Got to heat it up. I don't understand a damn thing I'm saying, friend, let alone what he's saying. Meanwhile, what's Dave doing over there? He's doing a bunch of promos for his Channel 10 forecast. You know, I got the distinct impression in there, you tell me if I'm out to lunch on this, that those guys didn't like the fact that they were participating in the promotion of storm chasing. You tell me if I was out to lunch. I got the distinct impression that they were not happy we were in there using their property to promote something that they probably are not big fans of. Yes or no?
Yeah, I think they were probably a little uneasy.
Yeah, I sense that. I heard some guys... talking off to the side about how this isn't going to look good.
Yeah, I think they might have been saying that.
Yeah. Okay, I'm just checking. Yeah, I think the scoop here, ladies and gentlemen, at the National Weather Service is they don't want to encourage this storm chasing business. They don't like the idea of the National Weather Service being used to go get people killed. And they realize that we're here not to be warned where the tornadoes are so we can get in our basements, but so that we can go spend time with them, frolic with them, meet them, get to know them. That's not what the National Weather Service is about. Let me see if I can have Dave redo his promo. It sure sounded professional. Dave, can you just say exactly what you said to your producer there for me? Because that sounded so darn professional. Just say that thing you've been doing for the last hour, that endless promo you've been doing over and over and over again.
We only do one take here, Tommy.
Come on, dude.
Don't give the people the wrong idea. We do one take, and that's it. But see, we have to do it for five different shows.
So we have to
kind of give it a generic thing.
Let me see if I can do it, all right? Hi, I'm Dave Dahl in Tornado Alley here in Kansas City. We're going storm chasing. Join us at 10.
That was perfect, Tommy. You're hired.
Oh, yeah.
You've seen it in the movies, but you've never seen Tommy Mischke spinning through the air at 320 miles an hour, so tune in at 10. I don't know. We don't know. That's the theory, anyway. No one's bothered to ask why the town got its name. Meanwhile, the cloud's going into Mammatus form. What's Mammatus, Dave?
That's the form, you know why it was named that way, don't you?
No.
Well, you've figured it out, Tommy.
Mammatus.
It's actually caused by clouds that take on that shape of mammary glands, Tom.
Seriously?
Seriously, that's how they got their name, and it's from mid-level instability.
Kind of the atmospheric version of Chi-Chi's.
Kind of.
Okay. I've just had to explain to the fellas the origins of the name Chi-Chi's. They didn't know that one, so I had to explain that joke. Those of you that don't know, you're going to wonder why I said that. Of course, Chi-Chi's, known as a Spanish slang name for a women's breast, something I had to learn from a manager at the Chi-Chi's in Midway. By the way, it makes me wonder where the name Mimosa comes from as I sit here wishing for a stiff drink. Mimosa, Dave, do you know the origins of the term mimosa, which is what, orange juice and champagne?
I don't. I can't figure that one out.
I don't either. And what's the name of the cloud? The name of the...
Mammatus.
Mammatus?
Kind of Mammatus, yeah.
Mammatus, mimosa. We say Mammatus, he say mimosa. Hi, fellas. How you enjoying the trip?
Just fine.
That's great. Just chime in whenever you want to. We're not storm chasing right now, folks. We're, Dave, tell them exactly what we're doing right now. First of all, we'll let you know it's 5:33 on Sunday, late afternoon, heading into early evening, and we've been driving now for about 45 minutes looking for what again, Dave? Tell the folks.
An article of clothing.
We're looking for a bathing suit for Dave.
Oh, for Tommy, not for me.
No, actually, both Dave and I are looking for bathing suits. More on that later. More on that later. This is how you know I'm not on vacation, ladies and gentlemen. I'm walking into a Kmart. Something I would only do if my duties as a broadcaster demanded it. I'm with Dave Dahl now, and we're looking for shorts. I suppose that needs a little explanation. Dave, you want to pass along to him why we're doing this? Because right now... Huh?
This is not going to air right now.
Well, there's nothing wrong with buying a pair of swimming shorts. Nothing. We don't got to work. Well, why are you doing it? It was your idea. I was perfectly willing to go to the casino.
Oh.
All right. We're doing this, ladies and gentlemen, because the fellas want to go swimming, and Dave and I didn't bring swimming shorts. Let's see where Dave's tastes run in swimming shorts. He's buying a pair with little pink hearts on them. Guys, I'm more inclined to buy the cheapest pair they have. I'm not going for style here. Huh?
$11.
$11? Is that what you're getting?
Yeah, that's what I'm
getting. You're buying the $11 pair? All right. What do you got there? How much are they? Can't we get cheaper than 11? You know, some of the just men's briefs they sell look like swimming trunks these days, huh? Excuse me, sir, we're giving a dollar away to anyone who can tell us where the town gets its name. Excuse me. Hi there. Oh, this guy'll help us out. Excuse me, for a dollar, sir, can you tell me where this town gets its name? Lee's Summit.
Don't have
no
idea.
I see. All right. You know, a dollar used to buy something in this country. Man, we're giving a dollar away to whoever can give us the story behind the name of this town. Do you know why it's called Lee's Summit?
I don't have a clue.
No idea?
None.
No, where a guy could find out where this town got its name?
Nope.
Okay. Thank you. We're in Lee's Summit, Kansas, ladies and gentlemen, trying to figure out where the heck this town got its name. I'll tell you one thing, fellas. You don't go to Kmart to find the sophisticated shopper. I can't say that. No, cut that out. Clyde, you hear me? Chop that. Excuse me, ma'am. For a dollar, can you tell me where this town gets its name? Lee's Summit.
Generally, I think.
Generally? And was this his summit?
I think so.
Uh-huh. Oh, fascinating. Thank you. Uh-huh. Would you like the dollar?
No, that's okay.
Oh, doesn't even want the dollar. I can't give a dollar away in this town. Excuse me, sir. For a dollar, can you tell me where this town gets its name? Lee's Summit.
I think it was a guy, his last name was Lee, but it was spelled L-E-A instead of L-E-S.
And was this his summit?
Yeah, this is supposed to be the highest point in Missouri.
You're kidding me. We're at the highest point in Missouri?
Well, that's what they say.
Holy smokes. I'd hate to see the low point. All right.
Okay.
Pardon me, ma'am. Can you tell me where this town gets its name, Lee's Summit?
Well, I really don't know. I'm not from here.
Oh, you're not? Where are you from?
Holden.
Where does Holden get its name?
I don't know. We've only lived there a year.
Where'd you live before that?
St. Joseph.
Where'd that get its name?
Joseph Ruby Doo.
Oh, thank you. Excuse me, ma'am. For a dollar, could you tell me where this town gets its name, Lee's Summit?
They're not sure, actually.
Nobody knows?
Well, there's been various stories, but somebody, Colonel Lee, supposedly built it, and it's supposed to be the highest point in the county.
Oh, okay. Thanks very much.
Mishki, AM 1500 KSTP. And Dave Dahl's KSTP weather for tonight. Snow ending in just a little while here. Low of 28 degrees. Tomorrow morning, some light snow possible. A high of 34 and a low of 23 tomorrow night. Currently, it's 32, and we return now to the Mishki broadcast.
If I were king of the forest, not queen, not duke, not prince, my regal robes of the forest would be satin, a not a cotton, a not chintz. I'd command each thing, be it fish or fowl, with a woof and a woof and a royal growl. As I click my heel, all the trees would kneel, and the mountains bow, and the bulls kowtow. And the sparrow would take wing. Fie, fie, were a king. Each rabbit would show respect to me. The chipmunks genuflect to me. The mackerel would lash. I would show compassion for every underling. Fie, fie, were king. Just king.
Each rabbit would show respect to him, the chipmunks genuflect to him,
and his wife would be queen of the main.
I'll be monarch, none all, none shall reign.
Your Majesty, if you were king, you wouldn't be afraid of anything?
Not nobody. Not no how.
Not even a rhinoceros?
Impossorous.
How about a hippopotamus?
Why, I'd thrash him from top to bottom.
Supposing you met an elephant?
I'd wrap him up in cellophane.
What if it were a brontosaurus?
I'd show him who was king of the forest.
How?
How? Courage. What makes a king out of a slave? Courage. What makes the flag on the mast to wave? Courage. What makes the elephant charge his tusk in the misty mist or the dusky dusk? What makes the muskrat guard his musk? Courage. What makes the Sphinx the seventh wonder? Courage. What makes the dawn come up like thunder? Courage. What makes the Hottentot so hot? What puts the ape in apricot? What have they got that I ain't got? Courage.
You could say that again.
on the highway late night here, heading to the airport to actually drop off this tape and send it up that way. A couple of things I need to get squared away, though. I think up till now, I've deceived you people and painted an overly optimistic picture of storm chasers. The picture being one where every time storm chasers go out, they see a tornado. It just so happens that Dave Dahl's one and only time he's gone out, he did see one. So he is batting 1,000. But I just heard about some guy in Oklahoma City who's supposed to be one of the top storm chasers in the country, whose average is spotting one tornado in every 9 times he goes out looking for one. Now, if that's what a guy who's real good at it has for a success rate, obviously you can't expect one every time. Now, after spending about an hour at the National Weather Service in Kansas City, we came away from there with, Dave, you slightly less optimistic than you were this morning. And the way I hear it, you tell me if I got this straight, is even though there could be tornado activity somewhere in this region tomorrow, the chances of us being right at the right spot at the right time, given circumstances right now, would be slim.
Yeah, slim at best, I think, Tommy. At the very best, there may be a half a dozen tornadoes in a 3-state area, and for us to be right in the right spot is it's about a 1 in 20 or 25 chance, I think, that we're going to hit that right thunderstorm that might produce a tornado.
And the way I hear it is, if we're going to take a shot at it being in a certain spot, we're going to take that shot in Joplin, Missouri.
Joplin is where we're going to set up. Yeah, we're going to go south of where we are right now, just in the hopes that we'll get into the right spot a little bit farther south, because right now we're too cold. The storms, if they're going to occur, are going to occur about 120 to 130 miles south of us.
And as we drive tomorrow, are we expecting to be in some kind of bad weather? What are we heading into as we head south?
Actually, as we head south, we're going to get warmer, and that's the key ingredient, I think. We want to get warmer and a little bit more humid. So as we go south, I think we're going to get into much more humid air, and that'll be the key that we're getting into the right breeding ground for severe weather.
And barring a tornado, are we expecting high winds, rain, what otherwise?
Yeah, even if we don't get a tornado, I think we're going to have severe thunderstorms. We're going to have a pretty good bout of hail and definitely some strong winds and lots of lightning and lots of heavy rain. So even without getting a tornado, we're going to have some excitement. It's just whether or not we're actually going to catch what we came down here for, and that's to learn a little bit more about tornadoes.
And also, correct me on this if I'm wrong, but part of the problem is we're trying to hit this thing quite early in the season. The peak is still a few weeks off. When would peak season be for Tornado Alley?
Yeah, this area, they start to peak about 3 weeks from now usually, but this season we've started a little bit quicker than normal, so that's why we decided to come down a little sooner. It's been very warm in the southeastern part of the country, and that usually spells an early severe weather season. So normally it wouldn't happen until the third or fourth week in April before they start to reach their peak down here, which would go all the way through May. And then we start to get into our severe weather season as early as May, and that carries through June and July.
The other thing I was going to mention, earlier we were talking about the sound of a tornado. And one of the strangest descriptions I've ever heard was the one you gave. I have heard tornadoes described ad infinitum as sounding like freight trains. And you say outdoors, when a tornado hits, it sounds like
squealing pigs, like hundreds of squealing pigs. And when you're indoors, it's the sound of the air rushing out of the house through any crevice that there is, and it does give a roaring sound. But when you're outside, it's the wind rushing by every object that's outside, and it's more of a very high-pitched squealing sound.
Okay, the Pike brothers, the storm chasers who are with us on this trip, are obviously and have in the past had great luck. They, as far as I know, have seen a tornado every time you've sent them somewhere so far.
Well, not every time, but they have had some fairly good luck. They hit a couple of them last year when we had, in the state of Minnesota, we had about 30 tornadoes last year. And a couple of times that we sent them out, they did get some tornadic activity on tape. Now, that's a pretty good average. They've been doing pretty well. So they're kind of like a good luck charm. If you want to get a tornado, you bring one of those guys along.
And why do you use them versus, I mean, what are the options for a weather station? Just sending out any old camera crew? I mean, why use storm chasers in the Twin Cities, in and around that area?
That's a very good question. Actually, tornado chasers and spotters are very, very important. There's a spotters network that's very valuable around the Twin Cities area, and we just love the fact that there's so many talented spotters out there in the field, because even though we have the technology, we have Doppler radar, we have the National Weather Service's NEXRAD, all of those things put together still do not give you the eyewitness account of what's going on. So spotters are very valuable to tell you, yes, there's not only rotation, but there's actually a tornado occurring out there.
Almost sounds like informants. They're just people who kind of keep you informed and are, you know them by name, and they just have some hotline they call in and let you know when they see one. How does it work?
Some of the spotters actually we have a good agreement with and have a good condition where they'll actually call us up. And most of the spotters are there for the National Weather Service. The National Weather Service will hear from them continuously throughout the storm, and then the warnings come out. But there are several that will actually call us as well. They'll call the Weather Service usually first, which is most important. The Weather Service has to find out about it right away, and they'll issue the warnings. And then we usually find out about it after that.
And tomorrow when the system moves in, specifically now what we're following is coming from where and settling where exactly? If we're going to Joplin, where is this thing coming that it's going to meet us there?
It's actually coming from two directions. We have one coming in from around Arizona. One part of the storm system is actually sweeping in from the south. The other one's coming in from the north. From southern Montana. Those two are going to get together and become very nearly one storm system in about the western part of Kansas. And because we usually look to the east or slightly southeast of the energy center, which is coming into western Kansas, we're looking at a pinpoint spot somewhere in southwestern Missouri or southeastern Kansas for the most severe weather.
So, folks, we're at the airport right now, and I know there are more sophisticated ways to send packages than the one we're going to explore here, but we're not doing Overnight Express. We're not doing FedEx. We're not using the cargo option here at the airport. We are simply looking for a human being who's flying to the Twin Cities to take this thing. Some stranger. Hopefully they won't be a stranger to you by the time we talk them into this. Since we actually found the first person with a big M on a sweatshirt to take this thing back, I should ask, who are you anyway?
My name is Jim Meredith, and I live in Bloomington.
Okay. You're coming back from the Sweet 16.
It was fabulous.
And the big victory, which all the people there know about, but give us an eyewitness account of the Minnesota showing down there for those folks.
It was just incredible. There was about 5,000 to 8,000 fans there that just showed so much support, and particularly yesterday against UCLA when they were down 10 points, the fans really got into the game, and they really, really helped that team get going. I know they did, and everywhere you went, everywhere, fans were going, let's go Gophers, let's go Gophers, everywhere. And
you seriously didn't see as great a showing for UCLA or for other colleges participating?
We had three times as many fans of all the other three schools combined. Iowa State had a pretty good group of people there, but Minnesota by far was the biggest showing.
Well, there's something to be said for walking around with a big U of M sweatshirt when you're looking for people from Minnesota. We came here basically trying to figure out how we'd tell who's going to be heading that way, and you live in Bloomington?
Yes, I do.
What do you do for a living?
I work for Lutheran Brotherhood.
Oh, okay. And how? Just had a few days off to watch this thing and back to work on Monday.
That's right, but maybe back to Indianapolis. I was at Kemper Arena in Kansas City, and a good friend of mine managed to get some fabulous seats down in San Antonio, so I went to that, and And maybe
you may be going to the Final Four?
Well, if we can get tickets. Yeah. If we can get tickets, we'll go there, but we'll see.
Did you hear about our University of Minnesota hockey team?
I know they won 6-3, I think. Is that right?
Not today.
Not today. Oh.
Today against Michigan? What? Pretty sure they lost. Last I checked, it was 7-3 Michigan in the second.
Okay. Oh,
so I don't think we have what would have been the first time in history two teams from the same college going to the Final Four in basketball and hockey, which had never happened before.
After the game yesterday, we went to a place called Champions on the Riverwalk, and there was a large contingent of fans watching the hockey game there with Michigan State.
Right.
That, I didn't hear anything about the Michigan game.
So how tough is it going to be to get tickets to the Final Four?
Probably very tough.
If not impossible, if you don't have them now, right?
That's right.
What, do you have some connection or something?
My friend who lives in Kansas City, who that's why I'm here, knows somebody in the business.
Okay. Okay. Well, it's just a little white plastic tape, and it doesn't even have a case, and yet there is an entire show sitting right there. That's a solid hour and 40 minutes right there. So if they do end up letting you take it on board, treat it like your own little baby.
You bet. I will.
Gentlemen, there still seems to be one final question to have answered here, and that is, this gentleman doesn't think the airport allows people to take on packages given to them by other folks who aren't traveling on the same plane. So he wants us to get clearance from the airport for this. So we are now waiting in a long line, hoping that the airport allows him to take this little white plastic cassette tape. It's not a bomb. I repeat, it's not a bomb. But when I get up there to the security gate, I'm going to tell the guard that it is a bomb, because they love that kind of humor. Dave and I did buy swimming shorts, and then because of having to drive off to the airport, never did use the swimming shorts. The rest of the crew, the Pike brothers, the storm chasers, are in the pool right now, and Dave and I are at the airport. And after the airport here, we're going to a riverboat casino. But Dave's just going to watch me gamble, because Dave doesn't have any vices. No weathermen have vices, but he's going to watch what it's like to view a man with several. And I'm going to give him quite a show.
Michigan Broadcast.
Yes, I was trying to reach Barbara Carlson.
I'll get her. Please hang on.
Hello?
Yes, this is Barbara Carlson?
Yes.
Barbara, my name is Susan Warrington, and I'm calling from Century Community College.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you would be interested in sitting on a panel for our Community Awareness Day on April 23rd of 1997. We're trying to do a welfare reform repeal and women in the media. And I was wondering if you'd be interested in doing something like that.
Well,
hello?
Hey, this is interesting. Hi, Vinny.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine. How's things with you?
Well, I'll tell you how things are. They're not well.
What's the problem?
Well, I want to speak to you as a friend of a friend of Mr. Hubbard's.
Let's see, you're a friend? That you know someone who's a friend of Stanley Hubbard?
No, I didn't say that, sir.
Well, you said you're a friend of the friend. How can you not know him if you're a friend? You know a guy. You know a guy who's a friend.
Have you read the Aristotle Rhetoric?
You know, I have, but it was so long ago.
Aristotle Rhetoric.
Well, yeah, but it was so long ago. You know, in Plato's Apology, that one, I think it's a paragraph 7, something that ties in here actually more with Stanley Jr. than Stanley Sr. Have you, I should check though, have you read that? So you know a friend of a friend of Stanley.
Right. I wake up with it every morning.
Plato's Apology?
Absolutely.
I wake up with a hangover. So anyway, what are you calling for?
I'm concerned again.
Oh, you're concerned. That's right. You're not having a good night.
No.
Well, I could have told you something, Vincent.
The world that hears you is not having a good night.
I could have told you, Vincent, this world was never meant for one as beautiful as you.
Thank you.
Starry, starry night.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was much better before when you had your...
When Tom Wyant was on?
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. What?
I'm sorry. You talk when I talk, which is very rude.
Oh, not as rude as hanging up on you, and I haven't done that yet. You know, I got a friend who's a friend of a friend. In fact, you ever hear the theory of 6 degrees of separation?
Yes.
Okay, so, you know, if you bring up 6 names anywhere in the world, you know, someone will know someone who knows that person. I mean, there'll be some connection. Mm. So within 6 people, I could be connected to President Clinton.
Probably.
And you're just connected. The only person that you could bring up that you're connected to is Stanley Hubbard. So you're thinking that you can get me fired, but I'm thinking I can get you killed.
Well, that's a terroristic threat, and the outcome of that is 5 years in jail. That's a felony.
You gotta catch me first, Vinny.
Well, you're not hard to find, are you?
Do you own guns?
You're not hard to find, are you?
Well, we got a security deal here. We got a couple off-duty cops who hang out pretty late. A lot of people think they go home when Lanfer leaves, but no, we keep them around for Mishki. I got clout here. Big clout, actually.
I bet.
830 on the dial, pal.
Well,
I knew I'd get you.
Oh, you can hear from me, but then I couldn't hold the line. Yeah, I slipped off the bed because the sheets were slippery in the head, and I went down on my knee. My left knee is so black and blue, and I got up to go to the bathroom, and I slipped off the bed because it was too slippery.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, so now I'm walking crippled.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. You would...
AM 1500 KSTP, St. Paul, Minneapolis.